This is East Carolina All-American Brian Packard, and we're talking Pirate Baseball and the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate Baseball.
Welcome into Extra Innings here on the Sports Objective, brought to you by Next Level Training Center. Our great good friend Trent Britt, the owner of Next Level, is joining us today. Glad to have him aboard. And of course, we have Alice right there in the middle of the guys, where Corey has said it would look like the Brady Bunch. Corey Glure, how are you, man? Glad to have you here.
Yeah, it's been a little while. How you been?
Good. Also with us, Kyle Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, fellas? They say always said in sports, tying is like kissing your sister. So I guess splitting the series is kind of like tying it. So I guess it's like we kissed our sister.
I think that what happened is we ran out of mops from like Lowe's or somewhere. So we had to split the series. We don't have enough mops. There's a mop. There's a coin shortage. There's a mop shortage, apparently, in hardware stores. So maybe we can get some more mops in for this weekend. Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
Doing okay, guys. Obviously not the weekend we wanted from a – from the standpoint of, you know, the split, not totally shocked, a little surprised. If you'd have asked me prior to the weekend, I thought we would have won the series, especially with it being at home. But we knew UCF was a very capable team, and so not totally shocked.
Your dog is upset about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's your dog's name?
The kids named him Rocky. I was going to go with more of a pirate theme name, but they wanted to name him Rocky, so that's what we went with.
Okay, I thought your dog was also named after a pirate. So,
no, that's like cat. That's
no, cat. I know the cat. I thought both the dog and the cat.
My bad. My son named him as well, and the cat's name is Duane.
Oh,
no doubt, guys. Want to get your thoughts on the series this weekend? I guess we could start with we'll start with Corey and then Trent. What do you think about the split? Obviously, you're not happy with the split, but at the same time, with this UCF team, we didn't know which team we're going to get. So we could have easily lost all four. We could have won all four, but we get the split.
I think these two heading in were a lot more similar than people understood, particularly with how they approach things at the plates. And you saw elements of that for all four games. These two operate in the same way when it comes to how they attack people offensively. Don't walk 17 and hit 13 in a series, and then we're talking about probably a different shift and how things shake up here. But UCF is a team that dealt with a ton of injuries and problems to start the year, and now they're at least healthy enough to a point where they know who's going to be in their lineup every day, and they know how to handle the bullpen. And even though they were thin in the rotation today, they were able to work around that. They know where they are now. They know how they sit now, and they have the talent to do what we saw for a couple of times this weekend. And East Carolina has the talent to do what they did a couple of times this weekend. These two are a lot more closely matched than I think. You know, this is just the problem of looking at the surface level of the records, because UCF has the ability and the talent to do what they did this weekend. They showed that today. They showed that Friday night.
Yeah, I completely agree, Corey. I there have been two series this year where being at the ballpark, watching the other team take BP, watching the dugout of the other team, I felt like you could clearly tell a team knew it was good. The first one was Charlotte. And I felt like the Charlotte carried themselves in a way where if you didn't know anything about them, you went, they think they can win these games. And there was no question being there Friday night. And if you just watched the body language and you knew the talent level, you know, UCF came in here and got what they wanted. They're probably thrilled with the split. But this is a club that I think people forget. If you looked in the preseason rankings, if you saw the preseason conference coaches poll, that, you know, there was a lot expected of. And they probably underperformed and underachieved a little bit. You know, but they were in a lot of top 40 polls in the preseason, and they've got a very talented roster. And honestly, if you did not know the records coming in this weekend and you just watch what your eyes told you, like Corey said, there really wasn't a lot of difference between what you saw on the field in terms of the talent level present. They've got speed. They've got some presence in the middle of the lineup. They've got some guys that can throw the baseball. They're really well coached. They know what they're trying to do. You know, they can attack a number of different ways, like Corey said. So, unfortunately, people aren't going to want to hear it, but I think this is more of what's to come as we play Wichita State and Tulane and we go on the road, you know, to South Florida and play some squads, that it's going to be very, very difficult to continue the, you know, the win-loss totals we've been on, not because we're not a good club, but as Coach Godwin says, the other team's trying to win too.
Corey, Trent, do you guys think that not playing last weekend against Houston, how much of that contributed to some of the pitching woes this weekend with the hit batters, with the amount of guys walked? Just we were not as crisp coming out of the bullpen. Obviously, we were down a starter, so that affected the whole pitching rotation. How much do you guys think not playing last weekend affected that, if at all?
I do think the first game Friday when the bullpen came in, there was an element of rust there that was tricky for the three high leverage guys in this pen to shake off. Colmore, Mayhew, Bridges pitched well Friday to close out that game and get the save, but Colmore did not look like himself to open up this series. Mayhew certainly didn't either. And so I think, yeah, we talked about this before, about 2 weeks off is a long time off for baseball. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, Gavin Williams was rusty to start that game. He put two men on to open up that game, and then he was smooth sailing the rest of the way. He has the time as a starter to get into a rhythm. Guys out of the bullpen don't. And you saw that in what was a close game. And, you know, that was kind of the impetus of the whole weekend, is Cliff was not happy that this team didn't pull away in game one. They got the win, but he had to use his key guys to finish out the first game. And that set the tone for the rest of the weekend. And not pitching in 2 weeks against a live competition, yeah, I do think that was a small element of how we saw things play out on Friday and the back end of game one. And then the second game, it didn't seem like anybody could really hold the paint there up the bullpen. So I think it did play a small part in what happened. But when push comes to shove, was this weekend went along, most everyone we saw had a little bit of time by that point. And so still walking 10 batters like we saw today, it was just not in the cards.
Yeah, I think one thing that people have to keep in mind too is, you know, on top of everything else, keep in mind that most of these guys, if they play college baseball, are used to playing. They're not used to going 7 days between – 5 games between days anyway. You know, they're used to playing on Tuesday and Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday. You know, so we've seen in the past when we get rained out in midweek games how that affects teams. So, yeah, you're already kind of in uncharted territory with how you're managing things going from Sunday to Friday without playing a game, and then you skip an entire weekend. I can't tell you – except what I saw, that, you know, we haven't pitched like that this year. But we give them 30 free bases, you know, over the course of a 4-game series with hit batters. And some of that's to their credit. Look, they get all over the plate, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, they challenge us to throw inside, and they got hit a lot. But I'm sure it had some effect. To be honest with you, I'd kind of defer to the coaching staff and the players on that one, because I'm just guessing on that. But I know it's been an adjustment this going into the year. Coaches in these conferences that we're playing 4-game weekends, we're all a little bit worried with how they were going to manage that with, you know, during the week. You know, I've even asked the coaching staff myself, like, what are you guys doing even from like a, you know, from a weight room or a conditioning standpoint on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because things are so different than in the past. So I'm sure that played some factor.
Good question, guys. I wanted to ask you, as far as pitching is concerned, as far as the is also a time of the season, because we know that, not making excuses, but we know how long of a baseball season it is. Is it also the fact that maybe some of the guys are injured, banged up a little bit, even with the week off, that they would be, in other words, they don't have their best stuff because of that?
There could be, if there is that, I'll be honest, I haven't heard anything about that. The only thing that crept up this week was Wisden Hunt. But outside of that, you know, it's the natural wear and tear of, you know, this point of a season where, you know, if that were a little bit shaky in terms of effectiveness, well, then we saw multiple guys pitch multiple days this weekend. And some of them, like Colmore, shaky on Friday, looked great Saturday. Sailor, shaky on Friday, looked great today. Like, you know, it's, I don't know if it's a physical thing at times. It's hard to power back up after 2 weeks gone mentally as well. And I think part of the issues that came up, certainly Friday, was that when pitchers were falling behind certain situations, they would try and overcompensate and they would run a fastball and they hit Jordan Rathbone again, or they would just overthrow a breaking ball and it's to the backstop. So it wasn't the physical element that really stood out to me with how things went pitching wise this weekend. It was a lot more in between the ears. It felt like just trying to do a little bit too much when a team that can put a lot of pressure on you, like UCF, started putting pressure on.
You mentioned Wisenhunt being out, sore arm. Do you know exactly what the situation is? What happened? And do you have any idea if he'll see the mound against Wichita, or is it wait and see?
I think that they're planning that he'll be good for Wichita State. They wanted to be cautious with him here this week because this happened in Houston when they were working together on Friday, and he was pitching a little bit and something flared up, and so they got him out as a caution more than anything. From what I've heard, I don't know if the team thinks it's woefully serious right now, but they're going to be careful with a guy that's this young, this important, and when you're talking about something like arm soreness, you don't want to chance anything, even if it's minor. And so I think that they're still looking at this weekend. They're going to reassess him, see how he feels after a week of rest now, and see if he's good to go for the Shocker series. But from everything I've heard, I don't think there's a major concern about what Carson's dealing with right now.
Outside of the plane crash, I don't think that Houston series could have went any worse. You get down there, you don't play. You could have had a series with Creighton had they called it earlier in the week. And then your damn pitcher gets hurt in the inter-squad scrimmage. I mean, good Lord.
It was not an ideal weekend. That was not how East Carolina was hoping to draw things up a week ago. But that's now in the past. And now, you know, they've got a few more games back under their belt. And hopefully then we don't run to a situation like that again the rest of the way.
Corey, did you at least get a great meal out of it at any point while you were in Houston?
After the scrimmage on Friday, the entire team went out to like a Cajun place called Raging Cajun. It's right by the hotel, and figured out how many of those guys knew how to eat crawfish because some of them did. A lot of others didn't. Some were terrified of it. Let's just say Ryder Giles knows how to handle crawfish. Connor Norby does not know what to do with the crawfish because Ryder gave him like you're supposed to pull it apart, pull off the tail, and then pull the meat out. And Connor just gave him the head and the body to work with, and he tried to put the whole thing in his mouth. So, like, no, it was a great meal on Friday, and then we were back home Saturday afternoon. It was a very quick trip.
Yeah, that's when you get the red beans and rice and the shrimp pull boy.
Well, yeah, He didn't know how to – a couple of guys were wary about eating crawfish. But then he had a guy like I think Jake Kuchman ordered 3 pounds of it. So he was just going to town on it. It turned out to be – they made the best out of a really unfortunate situation. And teams gelled together on the road. And that was only the third real weekend on the road this year. And if you count the Elon weekend as a weekend, which is hard to even say it was. So – you know, you spend all the time with each other on the road. You eat meals together. You travel together. You do everything on the road for 4 days. And to not have that with games, well, try to find a way to still put that together there. So play a little scrimmage, go out to a team meal, which with COVID, they still haven't really been able to do much here, and find a way to make the best out of that, even if you couldn't get a few games on your belt. So they're able to, you know, make lemonade out of that. But when push comes to shove, it's not what they were looking to do.
I know Connor Norby played his high school ball on the east side of Winston-Salem, East Forsyth High School in Kernersville. But he was originally from Minnesota, so I guess maybe we should give him a pass on the crawfish thing.
Well, I'm from Illinois, and I ate crawfish last weekend. I know how to deal with that, so.
Yeah. But no, diving into Friday's game one, you talked about a little bit of a shaky start for Gavin on walking a couple guys there early on, but he settled down, of course, 6 1/3, 10 Ks, 2 runs, on three hits. So just talk about his performance. And then the Pirates offensively got off to a good start, but they didn't keep adding to the lead, which is something that Coach Godwin referenced in the postgame.
Gavin, that was one of the better outings he had in terms of utilizing all four of his pitches. Like a few weeks ago against Memphis, it was fastball slider. Well, Friday, he was able to flash the 12-6 curveball. I think it's the best that curveballs looked this year. And then he also backed it up with a changeup. It was rare to break that out for Gavin, but he was able to support it with a changeup as well. So that was an outing in which he kind of got back to utilizing everything that he's been working on since coming to East Carolina. You know, he walked on as just the fireball freshman guy who hits 100, and now he doesn't hit 100 anymore. He'll hit 97, 98, but that's because he has, you know, one pitch he really trusts behind that, and two, that he's really learning how to trust week in and week out. And I thought that's what he showed us Friday to open up this series, that he trusts all those pitches now in pretty much any situation, any counts. So that was another ace level type performance from Gavin Williams. And then, yeah, I think the when the Pirates got to a 4-0 lead, Cliff felt as though that the lineup just kind of eased off a little bit, and that led to using some key guys out of the bullpen late. And it's finding the balance of figuring out how to finish out the first game and recognizing how many more games are to come in the span of a weekend. And if the Pirates are able to grab a couple more runs there when they were really performing well against Zach Hunsicker, who got the spot start, then the Friday night game looks a little bit different in terms of who's available for you. And then that transitions to Saturday. So it's the micro and the macro of a 4-game and 3-day series. And even though the Pirates got the win in game one, it wasn't quite managing the end of that game the way that the coaching staff was hoping for to set them up for a good shot for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. And also, guys, I want to mention, like, the way I look at the schedule, we talk about it on a weekly basis, but it looks like to me that, you know, basically it's like a regional every single week, the way that our conference schedule is set up. So we need to look at, you know, with Wichita coming up, you have Tulane coming up, you have Cincinnati, USF. It's not going to be an easy ride, but the same thing, once you get regional play and super regional and hopefully Omaha, it's not going to be easy the rest of the way. There's no give me's in baseball.
I just think it's more about like learning how to finish the game in the best way possible. That was the message after game one, and then that bled to game two. Because if they're able to just keep on barreling towards the finish line and get a comfortable win in game one. Remember the first couple of weeks, there were a couple of run rule victories in there for East Carolina because they saw things through the finish line and doubleheaders. You got to start off at 100% and keep it going as long as you can, 1-9 innings. And that means better at-bats offensively. Once you get a good lead, keep it going. What were you doing to get to that point? Well, keep attacking that way. Pitchers will adjust. You'll eventually get into different pitchers when the bullpen comes in. So how do you keep that persistent attack going at the plate, especially to start off a weekend like we saw Friday afternoon? If you keep that thing going even more, then maybe things look a little bit different from how we're sitting now.
Yeah, kill a fly with an axe. I mean, once you get up early and you just keep it going, keep pouring it on, because like you said, if you get up by several runs, then you can afford to leave pitchers in longer. If they give up a run here or there, it doesn't matter. You don't have to go in your bullpen as much. So, you know, how you perform in game one sets the tone for game two, particularly with these double headers. And, you know, I'm quite sure the guys aren't going, well, we got a 4-run lead. We can just go ahead and take the next few innings off. But they just seem to lose their intensity at times, Corey. And I talked about that earlier in the year, that the guys seem to lose their focus and intensity at the plate and kind of rely on the pitching staff to carry them the rest of the way. And I felt like it would cost us at some point this year.
Yeah, and maybe that came in for game two on Friday because and maybe this is also a little springboard after what your first question, Kyle, having 2 weeks off. And as the lineup just kind of, oh, we did our part, and now we're good. We got a 4-run lead and our ace is on the mound. Well, eventually Gavin's going to leave. And even though the bullpen's been great this year, well, they struggled to finish out Friday's game, the first two out of the bullpen. So
You got to stay as locked in as possible. Even though it looks as though things are comfortable, you've been great all season long. You're playing teams that are not going to just drift off on you. And so, yeah, it has happened a few times this year. And it did happen at the end of Friday's game. And that's part of what led to Friday night and suffering that loss. It's in the back end of that doubleheader. So they responded well right after that on Saturday. But how do you got to keep it up, keep it going throughout the span of a game and not just rest on your laurels as a lineup and think you've done the job when there's still, you know, still got nine more outs to get by that point when Gavin left the game. So you got to keep on going because this sport can get really weird, really wonky, and suddenly a blowout game turns into a tight game pretty quick, as we saw Saturday.
Yeah, you talked about game two Friday night. Pirates lose 10-5. Not something we've experienced very much this year is a team kind of doubling us up and kind of, you know, putting it away. So talk about that. I guess we lost twice this weekend by five runs. Not very many losses this year, with maybe the exception of the one of our road games at Wilmington or Chapel Hill.
I said the Wilmington game down in Wilmington was like 10-2 or something like that, okay. and then 8-1 in Chapel Hill.
Okay, so yeah, besides those two games, this is the only two games where we've really lost by multiple runs.
Yeah, don't hit the three-hole hitter four times in that game two on Friday, and that led to some of the early emotion firework that we saw that the series really, you know, kind of permeated the weekend. But, you know, it's telling, and I don't think it's a shock that when each team had to go to a spot starter this weekend, that team lost that game because, you know, these rotations are pretty well set for these clubs right now. And so when you lose your ace like UCF did in Colton Gordon, and when you lose your lefty power pitcher like East Carolina had to, and you go to someone, even though the guy's been good this year and Garrett Saylor out of the bullpen, well, the Knights were ready to go. You know, Saylor by and large has fastball and slider, and they were ready for that to go on Friday night. They got after him, and then they got after Spivey, and it just kind of snowballed from there. Amidst all of that, the Pirates were still within distance of that game until Ben McCabe ended it with his home run late in the game. Yeah, it's the type of game where, you know, as the progression of pitchers happened that night, and you had a short start from your spot starter, you look to how game ended, and it carries over. It does blend over like that. How UCF finished game one, charging back, completely played a part into how game two played out.
Corey, do you know that kid for UCF that got hit 73,000 times this weekend? Do you know if he talked about somebody's mama before the weekend or something? I mean,
I it's hard to fathom, frankly, because Rathbone doesn't, and maybe, you know, maybe Trent sees this a little bit differently. He's not crouching over the plate. He's not on the inside edge of the box. He will hunch over a little bit, but he's off the edge. And so the fact that he just got hammered, especially in that Friday game, and there were fastballs in the back. Like, he got hit on the bicep. He got the elbow today. Like, UCF's good at that. Like, they are good at getting bored by getting hit. And Rathbone's the best of the bunch. But, and so maybe I'll defer to Trent here. Is there something that you saw from him when you were at the games? Because the way he approaches the plate doesn't strike me as a guy who's looking to just go get beaned every time up.
No, I agree. I think, you know, there were a lot of our fans were very, I'll just say, emotional, you know, and some of the things they were yelling, you know, at the umpire throughout the course of the game. But I'll be honest with you, I saw it a little differently. And for him specifically, they had some guys who had both toes on the white. He wasn't one of them. I mean, I thought he had a fairly TTU.
Yeah. He's a good 8 inches back. Like, yeah, he's not close.
So my only thought, and I moved several times to get different angles of boards. I mean, my only thought was that we must have had a game plan to really try to pitch him inside a lot. And they must have seen something coming in that game that must have been part of the scouting report, because we went in on him a lot. And look, the bottom line this week, it wasn't just about pitching. There was a lot of things we could have done a little bit better. We could have done a lot better offensively as well. I'm not picking on the pitchers in any way, because we did some really good things. I mean, particularly, you know, the response that Colmore and You know, and Bridges had on Saturday when they came back in that 11-8 win, you know, they basically came in and really solidified things and bounced back tremendously from performances that weren't the way they normally pitch in their previous outing. And but for him specifically, I didn't really see anything that unless he was wearing a magnet under his uniform, was like that. We were trying to go inside a lot, and we were throwing a lot of two seam that was running in on him. I felt like at times, but nothing I saw. He wasn't one of the five or six that they had that were really openly crowding the plate.
And things like that, we're talking about the big picture with UCF. Things like that are going to happen. I think our fans need to sometimes they need to be decaffeinated, not making excuses. But when 2-2 on the year, on the series, rather, obviously you want to win all four. All of us on the show are very competitive. We want ECU to go 56 or actually this year 55-0. It's not going to happen. It would be awesome if it would happen, but it's not going to happen. So we've been spoiled a lot lately, and UCF beat Mississippi early in the season. I know they were number one at the time. They beat them at Ole Miss, I believe, if my memory serves me right. So it's not like this team, anybody that came in and thought we were easily going to mop up UCF, I don't think that, you know, I think that was very unrealistic.
Before the game today in our pregame chat, Cliff said bluntly while we were talking, you know, it's amazing that, you know, when you look back at the first 2 weeks of league play, that he's still shocked that it was four wins each weekend. And that's nothing about what he thinks his team's capable of. It's about just the nature of the beast of these weekends now, where, you know, I thought Memphis gave everything they had 2 weeks ago and they walked out without a win. And since then, they have looked brutal. Cincinnati looked okay. And since that point, they have looked pretty dang good. And now they grab three against Wichita State this weekend. Like, it's just to walk into a series, even to walk into today and just kind of believe and assume that a victory is in the bag, that's just not the nature of the sport. It's not the nature of what this is. And now with this change to the schedule this year, like 4-0 is hard to do. 3-1 is hard to do. 2-2 is hard to pull off. Like, that's just the nature of what this game is week in and week out. And now you're talking about four games in 72 hours. Like, that's a lot in a short amount of time. And you're not going to always have your best foot forward every waking moment of that.
Corey, you move on to Saturday, and we jump on the nights early, come out swinging away, and kind of, you know, I had some run late, but end up having to hang on as, you know, UCF puts a charge in it, and then we score a couple in the eighth, and then they come back with a couple of solo shots. Thankfully, we scored those two runs in the eighth to give us a little bit of cushion.
It's what the team wanted to end the first game on Friday. That's what happened Saturday. They had a big lead, and then UCF just immediately got right back in it. It was 6-0. And that was 6-5 in the blink of an eye. And then the bullpen came in and performed better than what they did on Friday. We mentioned Cam Colmore, and he walked in on Saturday, and he didn't demand the ball from Cliff Godwin, but according to Cliff, he had a look at him that he's like, I'm going to come in, and you're going to put me in, and I'm going to pick up someone here today because I was bad on Friday. And that's what he did. And Bridges came in. He was electric. And then this offense finished off the game. They got the home run from Francisco, and then they got the throwing error in the seventh inning that played a couple of runs, tacked on two more in the eighth inning. That's kind of the vintage East Carolina offense right there. Big lead early, and then they let their pitching dictate the next couple of frames, and Jay Kuchmaner struggled, but the bullpen came in and finished off that job. And then, the game's still in balance a little bit. Here are a couple more runs to finish out the night. We saw that time and time again from this program over the last few years. That's what Saturday was. It was a lot of runs that got put up. But the way that game transpired over nearly 4 hours, that's what Cliff Godwin's looking for from start to finish.
Well, and we got off to a great offensive start in that first inning, and really up and down the lineup, we're putting great swings on the ball. But keep in mind, if you're looking at it from their perspective, I believe that was the game they walked 10 batters. I think they walked us 10 times in that game. And I think they out hit us in that game. I think they had 13 hits. We had 11 or right around there. But if I remember, they walked 10 batters. And so that it was really a weird game in that we got off to that phenomenal start. And again, being at the park, I heard you mention Cliff getting tossed earlier. I can tell you that for me, I was right above the dugout and I moved around. I could hear almost every word that Cliff said. I absolutely thought that was calculated on Coach Godwin's part as a fan. That's just my opinion, being there. But you could feel we needed something. And I thought two things did it. One was Francisco's home run and the other was Coach Godwin getting tossed, that I felt like made me at least relax a little bit and go, okay, we're going to be okay, because we had started to kind of cruise. And I know that for me, again, just as a fan, this is just my opinion, but I'm around this team a lot. I have felt like all year, like the next step for us, and it's kind of what Corey was speaking to earlier, is sort of being able to put our foot on somebody's throat and just finish them, and kind of having a killer instinct. And, you know, when you look at the great teams we've had in the past and you try to measure how many killers do we have in that dugout, you know, I think for this group, we're probably a little younger than the average East Carolina fan understands versus who we're playing against. I think at times, you know, we're really talented. We're good. We're really well coached. The next step for us is figuring out a way to really step on the gas and put somebody away. And that's easy to say and hard to do sometimes because, again, the other team's trying to win as well. But that was a game that easily could have gotten away from us when you look back at it, if not for the 10 walks issued. And because after that first inning, we really were fairly dormant for a while offensively. And that first inning was phenomenal how good we looked.
Yeah, approaches I feel like they've had against a pitcher all year. They had a book on A.J. Jones. And it kind of felt like, again, we talked about the start, how similar these two offenses are this weekend. UCF had a similar attack on Jay Kuchmaner that day because those two pitchers are very similar with what they were trying to do. And when you know it, both offenses got to them. They were absolutely relentless to get Jones out of there, who pitched great last weekend. And then they got him out after a third of an inning. And I agree. I think there was a little bit of a, well, we did our part. We got the starter out, and now we're into the bullpen here, barely into this contest. We're okay. And then, well, Cooch Maynard struggled. UCF started getting the barrel up, and they started letting a ton of runs. And so that was the back and forth a little bit of the bullpens. And then the ejection, I don't know if it was 100% calculated to just go out there and get thrown out. I don't know if Cliff is that type of guy. I think he did think it was a strike. But it was clear when he was walking off the field, he turned to his dugout, and he said this after the game. He said, "I had your back. Now come get mine," as he walked off the field. And that was the decree there for his team to finish that game off for him. And they did. That was the end of the game, as it turns out. Because from that point on, they played it a couple more runs, and the game was over. This team occasionally, you're right, Trent, does need something to snap back in to finish out a game. The 2019 team could kill a game off. This team hasn't quite done that with as much regularity as we saw from that team a few years ago. And the age thing's a great point, because you see some of these, you know, see a couple of third-year guys in the infield, you know, and the leaders of this club right now, Norby and Francisco with what they've done, Cadell behind the plate. But you're thinking about how many games they've played as regulars, and it's not a ton because of what happened last year. And, you know, Norby was not a regular part of the rotation his freshman year. Francisco was trying to find a spot his freshman year in 2019. You know, Bryson Worrell, you know, Elaine Hoover, all these guys still don't have a ton of games, you know, perspective-wise, that some of these other, you know, some other teams of juniors and third years have had in the past. So, yeah, who's going to be the, you know, the catalyst to keep the energy going and to keep guys locked in and to make sure that things, you know, keep barreling forward? It could be, frankly, the second-year freshman standing at third base is having an unbelievable conference season right now with what he's done so far. Maybe he's the guy. But, yeah, there needs to be more of that from this team. And, you know, you got 4 weeks to find who's going to be that guy for this club.
Well, we're a lot better club right now offensively, I believe, than we were in February. And I believe because of that we're going to be a lot better in June. I really do. And, you know, I was worried about that when we went and played Georgia Southern. And I don't know if you guys followed that series they had at Oklahoma this weekend, but they went to Oklahoma and took 2 of 3 You know, that's an experienced club down there. And so that's when it really hit, when I was looking at the starting lineups and going, man, there's some teams like Tulane that are probably going to be, you know, as young as we are in terms of the experience of who they're rolling out there, because they're rolling a lot of second year guys out. But, you know, I trust that our guys, I know our staff, you know, probably recognizes that as well, what you're saying, Corey, that, you know, that Zach Agnos hasn't started that many games yet. Norby, you know, they had not started that many games yet prior to this year. Moreland's obviously a true freshman. Hoover, you go through the lineup, even Worrell, you know, this was really the first year, or going into last year was the first year where they went, hey, you're going to be a dude. So it's, I think there's still so much growth that's going to occur with this group. And it'll be fun to watch. And like I said, the reason I've got a lot of hope, and for all we've accomplished so far, I still think this team has got a lot more things it can get better at. And that's, to me, that's really exciting.
Now, Trent and Corey, Corey, you referenced the rough start for Jake Kuchmaner on Saturday. Obviously, Kuch has struggled this year more than he has in the past. He still pitched very well at times. But, Trent, we'll start with you. I just want to get your perspective on Kuch. I know opponents right now are hitting 318 against him. And Coach Godwin talked about it yesterday in the post game. Just in his opinion, you know, Kuchmaner's a lot of times his own worst enemy, just because he wants it so badly, is maybe a little too analytical. And you know, his fastball command has not been what it has been in the past.
Yeah, it's I think for me, the word I've used is puzzling a little bit, because you're not going to meet anybody that prepares any better or any harder. I got a firsthand look at what he did. You know, he was, you know, from what I saw, the leader of the pitching staff in terms of coordinating workouts and, you know, all of the preseason prep before the coaches and the strength coach particularly ever get hold of these guys each and every day. And so I know how he's wired, and he's meticulous with his preparation and, you know, and understanding who he's facing and what he wants to try to do. And so I really don't have an answer except what we've all seen, which is he hasn't obviously had the performances that he, or the outcomes he'd want to have. You know, and I hate it for him, because I know nobody wants to do it any worse than he does. You know, we could talk all day, and I know people sit in the stands and do it about what, you know, what is or isn't working from his stuff and all of that. But he has the same pitch repertoire that he's had, you know, for the last 4.5 years. It's just a matter of him executing them and you know, maybe getting a little luck to go along with it. But I'm sure if you asked him, he'd be the first one to say that he's, you know, he's not happy with the way things have gone so far. But I'm going to trust that they're going to figure it out. I know he's working with Coach Dietrich, and they're trying to figure out and probably trying to come to, you know, is it something with, you know, with the way he's gripping the ball? Is it something in his mechanics? Is it just the way he's, you know, executing pitches? But I really don't know. But again, it's, you know, we've got to get him going. And I'm sure, you know, that both he and Tyler Smith, you know, Tyler's had, you know, that Memphis outing was really good for him, but, you know, it wasn't characteristic today of the way that he normally pitches as well, struggling to command the zone. So I don't have an answer for that. I just know that, you know, that we need those guys, and they play a big role in this team.
I think you talked about people talking, you know, figuring out what might be wrong with his stuff. And that's fair. I see 5 walks on the season, which, I mean, that's a very small number, but teams are hitting him. So things like, is his fastball, you know, having as much, you know, even a little bit of sinking, like what we saw in his junior year? Is that changeup finding the corner as much? Because that changeup is so key for him. It looks kind of like, at least UCF was laying off his curveball. That looked pretty clear on Saturday. But, I mean, that's this guy from the second he walked on campus, even through a frustrating freshman year that he had, there were very few that were better at being prepared and ready to go just in case he was called upon. He is the guy that Alec Burleson coins as the reason why he became the player that he became. And now we see what Alec, a second round draft pick, because they were roommates. They came out of the same area, and Alec saw how Jake prepared, even though Jake wasn't getting time in his freshman year, and Alec remade himself because of what Kuchmaner was doing. They're two incredibly close friends. And so we know the work ethic of what Jake Kuchmaner is. He is a straight up dog when he's on the mound. He'll find a way to get you through, even when not performing to his A level. He has some of the craftiest stuff on this team, and by and large, it's still there from everything I've seen. So he's going to get another crack here against Wichita State to show what he can do again, and maybe just, you know, backing off and not diving fully deep into a scouting report. Maybe that's the plan here. Maybe just kind of clear his head a little bit, let him go. I mean, who knows? Because this game is fickle. And for one of the best preparers on this team, it's hitting him hard right now. So he has the clarity in between his ears to handle a lot of adversity. And this is probably the biggest that he has had so far in his career. Knowing him and knowing the type of guy he is, not just how he prepares, but just him as a person, and Trent attests to this too. He's the type of guy that's going to figure it out and knows he'll figure it out. And he's such a key to the environment of that clubhouse because he keeps things looser than so many guys there. Like he is the jovial one of that group. And when he is on his game, the rest of the team is supporting him and behind him and on their game.
Corey, you said maybe, you know, very analytical, maybe he needs to back off scouting reports a little bit. Maybe just go throw his best stuff instead of worried about what's the best pitch to go after this guy with, according to what other pitchers have done with him. Maybe he just needs to go throw his best stuff and not worry about it.
Yeah, maybe he's already doing that. Maybe he tried that here against UCF. I don't know. But, I mean, we know what his stuff is. We know what he's capable of doing with that stuff. And we've seen it. Certainly in 19, we saw it. We saw him in 2020 as well. Like, we know what he is. He is one, he can slice that strike zone up better than anybody. And right now he's getting too much of it, and teams are hitting him because of that. So how does he get back to finding the edges of the zone? How does he find that change up off the plate outside to right-handers and get them swinging at it? That's the key now for him. And maybe it's just, I'm not a pitching coach, not a baseball coach. Trent's better equipped to answer that than I am. But if there's anybody that's equipped to figure this out, it's him, just knowing him over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I will say, Bubba, that the one thing I've noticed this year, just an observation, he hasn't – and you have to credit the hitters a little bit with this, but, you know, UCF particularly wasn't chasing out of the zone. And that's a part of – for Cooch, so much of his success, you know, is based on changing speeds and hitting spots and executing his pitches – and then, you know, pitching backwards to some guys. I mean, you've seen him blow guys away with his 86, 87 mile an hour fastball because he's just got them so tied up like a pretzel mentally. But some of that is because he's able to expand the zone with some of those guys a little bit. And, you know, for whatever reason, the last couple of outings, the guys just haven't chased some of that stuff. And UCF laid off all of it. I was there behind the plate for his start, and they just weren't chasing. And so it put him in a lot of counts. He needs to be ahead in the count. He needs to work ahead in the count. You get him 2-0, 3-1, like almost any pitcher, and he's a little easier to hit. And so I'm sure all of those are things that they're going to look at and continue to try to address. But I don't think it's any one thing. And each start's been a little different. He's had some tough luck as well, some C&I ground balls and things that, you know, have caused him to have to come out of games earlier than probably you would want to. And then I'll be honest with you, too, early in the season, if I remember correctly, we weren't giving him a lot of room for error. A lot of run support, and so it was, you know, a situation where some of the times he's having to come out of games in the fourth or fifth inning because we just weren't scoring, and you felt like that you couldn't give a run up on a ground ball. I'm sure, like Corey said, I mean, I trust these older guys. I feel like they're quality preparers and they're quality competitors. And Corey nailed it. If you watched, one of the things that jumped out at me this weekend is Tyler Smith is always one of the guys waving a towel. You know, and Cooch is always jumping all over the place and celebrating even after they've come out of a game. And I notice that stuff because that's not always the case with people. And to be able to continue to be all in with, you know, with the team when maybe you're not having your best day, you know, you always are just going to root for a guy like that. And like Corey said, we've seen what he looks like when he's good, and his good is real good. So whatever it's going to take to get him back there, I know he'll do that.
And the last thing you want to do, guys, as a guy like Cooch, is to get him too much into his head, trying to do, like we were talking about, too much when you're doing that. I mean, when you hear the term that sports is 90% mental, 10% skill, this particular case, you don't want to give him too much in his head. He just needs to go out there and take care of business, right?
Yeah, you don't want to overload anybody with, all right, here are a bunch of meticulous things that maybe we can change right now and fix, because maybe the change up, it needs just a slightly more RPMs to it. Like, here's how we do that sort of thing. Like, you don't want to drown people in information when you're struggling like this, because that just makes the mountain steeper. And so you know, if there is a guy on this pitching staff that can handle a download of information like that, it is him. But yeah, there's a capacity for everybody. And so just finding a way to have him be out there and kind of be the easy, quick pace pitcher that he is. When he's going, he's firing. Like, give me the ball and I'll go. Like that's the key now for him, for Jason Dietrich, for Cliff Godwin, to get him back to that point. And it might not be immediate, but they're going to certainly work on it.
Just expanding on what Trent's saying a little bit, as far as, you know, Coach Godwin's confidence in these guys, you know, Tyler Smith and you know, him being in the program for so long, just like Jake Kuchmaner. You know, you saw it in the post game today. Coach Godwin said, "Call me crazy, but I think we'll come out and pitch very well at Wichita next weekend."
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to give 30 free passes this weekend at Wichita. Like, I'm going to put my money on that now. They're not going to hit 13 batters. Like, that's just not going to be in the cards this weekend. And it was the case of trying to do a little bit too much at times, and suddenly there are base runners everywhere behind you. That it can happen in a flash in this sport. You know, Tyler today, that's certainly not the Tyler Smith we've seen throughout his career. Like, he could not find his fastball, bar none. Like, the Knights completely took that away from him. And if he can't get that sink going and get that contact going, then what happened today happens, because he relies so much on that two-seamer. These guys are all better than what we saw over the last 2 days of this series. Kuchmaner, Smith, they are better than what we got here. And they faced a lineup that exploited them. They faced a lineup that, yeah, Kuchmaner leaves it in the zone. And so UCF hit it out of the zone. Well, if Tyler's fastball is not sinking, it's going to miss off the plate. And UCF didn't swing at it at all. And so they made him go to his curveball. So it's stuff like that that a very savvy team, a well-coached team, and a well-coached lineup is able to do against some high-quality pitchers. Pirates do it to a lot of teams, and UCF did it a couple times too this weekend.
Moving ahead to next weekend with Wichita State, guys, I know that we're split 4-4. We have a 500 record on the road. What do we have to do to have the kind of success we've had at home on the road with the likes of Wichita State?
Don't hit 13 batters. I mean, don't hit 13 batters. And finish off games, because you're not going to have – I know the crowds are great this weekend, especially today. Like, I thought that crowd would – like, even when it was clear that things were going to miss early on today, the crowd just on its own was trying to rally behind Tyler Smith in the third inning when the bases were loaded, trying to get him through it. Like, that was great. They were unprompted. They were battling for him, and then they were trying to keep this team in today, like, and trying to lug them through and get them something offensively against Sinclair, which they couldn't figure him out at all today. You're not going to have that this weekend, and the Pirates haven't had a lot of tests on the road. We talked about this a few weeks ago, guys. We thought they were going to get one at Houston. Funny how that works. And so now they're going to get one at Wichita State, and that ballpark should have been buzzing. But with Shocker's struggles here of late, we'll see what the fan interest is to go out to that series this weekend. That's a great baseball fan base, and they will likely see a top 15, top 10 team come in and still try and come out and fill that place to whatever capacity they have there in Wichita. But you're not going to get the folks behind you pulling you through and getting you through some of the games like what they had to do at times this past weekend. You're going to have to do it on your own. Trent talked about this a few minutes ago. Who's going to be the catalyst to keep the energy going, to keep the pedal down, to finish out games against a pretty good team on the road?
We're starting to see some guys. Don't underestimate what Zach Agnos did this weekend. You know, I felt like he if we get that back going, that's one more to kind of add in the mix of guys that are beginning to play to their capabilities and their talents. You know, and again, remember how young Zach is. So I wasn't sleeping on him. I was just waiting for him to get going, and he looks very comfortable at the plate right now. I heard Coach Godwin's, I think, post-game interview with you, Corey, where he was just talking about him kind of getting out of his own head a little bit. And that's so much of it. So one by one, if you can start kind of offensively checking guys off and going, okay, he's good. He, you know, obviously right now Francisco's locked in. Norby's been locked in all year long. Cadell's going to be Cadell. He's got double-digit home runs already. You can go on down the list of guys. And there's going to be ebbs and flows to it. But I think that was one of the positive takeaways for me was, A, I saw some young arms that haven't had a lot of time on the mound do some good things this weekend, and maybe that means they're going to get run back out there again, and we're going to need that. You know, Agnos getting going was big. And I think the biggest thing is, guys, we're 28-7. We're 28-7. So they know who they are. Like, the team knows that. They know they're 28-7. Wichita State would love to be 28-7. They're 20-15 after 35 games, and they're good. But they're not 28-7. And so I think our guys will be hungry to get there and play. And like Corey said earlier, sometimes going on the road can kind of give you a hyper-focus about what you're there for, what's your job. There's no distractions. There's no girlfriends. There's no families, you know, having dinner with you. There's no people coming by your apartment. You know, you're just there to play. And so hopefully it'll be a business trip for them to get back on the right track. But it'll also be a good test because you know, 2 weeks ago, Wichita State looked like a team that – you know, was going to be contending for a conference title. And they may still. They're 8-7. I think they lost 3 out of 4 to Cincinnati this weekend, you know, which I'm sure they're disappointed about. But they'll be looking to bounce back as well. So I guess my hope is our guys will just be really hungry to continue to get back to their winning ways. Again, we've won 4 out of every 5 games we played. So, you know, hopefully that'll be the way they approach this road trip.
Yeah, well, hey guys, we have just a couple.
I want to let Agnes before we go here, Dave. Sorry. Because I think he's been – in conference play, I think he's the MVP of this team. I mean, Gavin Williams certainly has a case to make with that here, but he's getting on at a 540 clip in conference right now. He was 500 at the plate this weekend, and he also does it defensively. I mean, I think we this happened a few times this weekend, and Coach O and I talked about it a few times. Him diving to the line, going to his right at third base is one of the best weapons this team has defensively. He is slick back there. We knew he was that defensively. He's shown that throughout his career, but you're right. He cleared the head. Like, that's what was talked about today with Cliff on our post game show. And now the bat that the team knew he also had is scorching right now. And so the lineup fills out, and you have a guy who is also a huge extrovert in that locker room. Zach Agnos is one of the most talkative guys in that team. If you remember his brother, Zach is similar, maybe not as intense as Jake, but Zach is the guy who keeps things going, keeps things talking, keeps things loose. And if he's also leading by example, like he has been over the last 3 weekends here in conference play, then you're going to like where a lot of things sit in the next month or so if he's going to keep up this pace.
And, guys, another point to make to add on to that is he's going back to what you're talking about, Trent. He's young, right? I mean, he's a young player. So you take away the 2020 season, and, I mean, he didn't have but, what, a handful, what, 15 games, I guess it was. It was not many of the 2020 season. So he's relatively young as far as experience is concerned.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why, again, when I look at who we're rolling with right now, I feel like these guys, again, I look back, I always try to look in 30-day increments and say, are we better than we were 30 days ago in certain areas? And you're going to have ebbs and flows. Look, there's an old saying that pitching kind of dominates the first third of the season, then offense takes over, then pitching comes back the last third. It just sort of over a 60-game college season or 56 always seems to flow that way. And we're in the period of time right now where offense usually kind of carries teams a lot of the weekends and a lot of the games. And the pitching kind of starts to come back. It's just the way it's gone. And, you know, you got to be capable of winning a lot of different ways. And I know Coach G talks about that a lot. And this club's shown it can do that, but it can do it more. I mean, we can win pitching or we can win offensively. But I don't really care how we do it as long as we do it. And different games are going to call for you to do it different ways. They just are. And that's not just us, by the way. If you follow college baseball, that is every single Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. There are scores that you look at and shake your head every single week. You know, with teams, whether they're winning or losing. So I trust we're going to continue to get better in every area, and we'll bounce back against Wichita State next week.
This team
– it's nice to bounce back, by the way.
Yeah. This team chops up their season 11-game increments with the 56 kind of tailing at the back end there. Now this year, you're talking about 50 games because they've lost 5 now due to postponements. So 10-game increments here. We're into the fourth batch of that right now, and the first three have gone pretty damn well. And so, yeah, there's still plenty of time for this team to, you know, there's only one team in the nation that is not talking about losing right now. Everyone else has losses on their schedule, and the Pirates had two this weekend. They had two wins this weekend. They still sit towards the top of this league. They still sit in the top 15 in the RPI. They're still in a really good spot.
Yeah, Corey, speaking of Fairfield, I heard your conversation with Coach O and the ESPN announcer saying, maybe it's time to do away with the RPI. Just not even count that this year. Like you said, it's funny when it can benefit a team like Fairfield, we should just do away with it.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly connected those dots. And yet this year, with everything going on and the protocols and how schedules look different, RPI is flawed. But Fairfield's done everything they could possibly do to be in this discussion, and they should be in the discussion. I don't know if they're capable of hosting anything. And yes, they played a schedule that is not strong, but other teams have played schedules that are worse, and they have worse records than Fairfield right now. So, I did connect those dots last night. And Kyle Peterson's the analyst of college baseball. He's great. I love him. But yes, it was fascinating to me that suddenly a Metro Atlanta team is in with the big boys right now in the top of this discussion. And, maybe now's the year we should ease off on using this metric that we've used now for the last couple of years to slide everything together. There is something that isn't quite fair there to Fairfield, because I don't know what more they can do. They've done everything they needed to do, and they might run the table here with their strength of schedule. So the selection committee has a conundrum there, and it's great to see, because I love when a small school like this throws a wrench in plans, and that's what Fairfield's doing.
Yeah, no doubt. And like we talked about, you know, last week and the previous week, we got a situation here where the host sites are going to come out early. So what you do now matters, of course. I mean, they claim you can get a host site and still not be a part of your own regional. I doubt that's going to happen unless somebody completely falls apart. But not just for Fairfield, but East Carolina, what we do these next couple weekends is very important.
Yep. I mean, the bid's already in. I know that. East Carolina submitted a bid for a regional. They got, you know, the announcements come out May 11th, I believe, is the date. So you got two weekends between then and now to once again solidify who you are. They've done it on merit already this year. The location certainly works. The Pirates have shown they can host a regional. They've laid out everything. They've got eight more games to lay out just a little bit more. And then we'll see where the chips fall. But East Carolina has certainly done their part thus far.
No question about it. Guys, now do you want to go? We'll go to our PGX pitcher of the game and PGX player of the game. I know Bubba's been working really hard behind the scenes on that. So we'll do that. Our former great third baseman, Mark Minakazi, and has PGXgloves.com and a new manager. Really happy for him. He'll be doing that this year. As well, we had him on a couple weeks ago, but PGX player, you want to go pitcher first, Bubba?
Our PGX pitcher of the week, Gavin Williams, 6 1/3, two runs. Both of those were earned on three hits, 10 strikeouts to that one walk in the series opener. So congratulations to Gavin, a multi-time winner, as you would expect. And then our PGX player of the week, Thomas Francisco, 9 of 16, two home runs, a pair of doubles, six runs driven in, quite a week for Thomas. And, you know, Franny's up to, I think, 399 now. So he's right there. Connor Norby's 428. And then you have Franny at 399. Now, honorable mention, I don't want to leave out Zach Agnos. And what a weekend he had, 8 out of 16. He's up to 265.
No doubt about it, guys. Both of those well-deserved for the player of the week and pitcher of the week. Guys, as far as players or maybe the pitchers or players, are there guys that you are expecting to, like Zach, that maybe they haven't had the year so far, or maybe they're so young that you're looking forward to step up? Maybe some guys are off the radar?
I don't Josh Groves is a guy that I think he performed pretty well this weekend. I know he gave up a little bit on Friday, but the team really liked him coming into the year, and there weren't a lot of spots for true freshmen in the pitching staff to try and make their hay. But I think he's got the makeup and the arsenal. If he adds some more bulk to him, he can be a stud for this team. I think he's becoming now, working his way into discussion of being a guy to go to more regularly out of this bullpen moving forward. So I think he's been a little bit on the radar this season, but he's certainly not one of the names that you think about when you're talking about this Pirate pitching staff that I think it's worth keeping an eye on what he's been able to do so far this year. His youth has been hard to break through, that the true first-year youth on this pitching staff, but he's done a really good job at it.
I'll add in. I completely agree with Corey. I would have said Groves, and I'll add in Carter Spivey as well, just because I think I know how high they've been on Carter. And I tell you, he came in the other night, and again, he's had some outings where his stuff has looked really, really good. I think he was up to 92. With his fastball, he's got a really good slider. I know they've liked him a lot every fall he's been here. So those could be two guys that play more prominent roles as we kind of head down the stretch.
And I thought Carter, he gave up a couple of hits on Friday night, but I thought it was a tough luck outing for him. And yeah, he walked into a jam and then just finding the right spots in the infield. There was one ball that never left the earth as it rolled through the shortstop hole, that just any sort of bounce there, and there's an infielder there. So little things like that, everything that he does moves, everything does tumbles and has life to it. And I thought he looked pretty good this weekend, despite the fact that he wound up giving up a run.
He's the reason I brought that question to you guys, because he's a guy that I really think, if we want to go deep into June, he's a guy that he's kind of like an X factor for me. I've been kind of following him as far as his health. He looks like he's back to full strength. Don't you think, guys?
Yeah, it was a blister at the start of the year, and that was even something before the year. And so that has gone away, or he's at least managing it here. So, yeah, that's not a concern from everything I've heard.
All right, next up, we're going to go now to – we have some comments from fans, so we want to put those on the screen, some questions for you guys, for Corey and Trent. Bubba's got those ready, I believe. First of all, Ben Byram says, curveball Corey. So we have good old Ben Byram from 94.3 The Game. Richard Osbrook said, did UCF batters approach take away our inside pitches? We hit a lot of batters this weekend, and there was a lot of talk of UCF batters crowding the plate and being outside of batter's box. We talked about that earlier, but I want to get your comments on that.
Not a ton. I think we were trying to throw inside, as Trent was saying. And there are a couple of guys – every team will have guys that are hugging the line, and UCF didn't have any, you know, exorbitant amount of extra doing that. I think the Pirates are trying to pitch inside. Fastballs are getting away every other inning, it felt like, in hitting a batter. So, no, and in terms of being outside the batter's box, I didn't notice anything about that.
No, I agree. I people yell that all the time, but I think it's a little bit misunderstood what the rule is. I didn't see, you know, you hear people yelling, get back in, get in the box, and they're out of the box, and I didn't see that at all. What I saw was guys, you know, we probably could have pitched a little better, combined with the fact that they don't move. When the ball is coming at them, they take it. That's part of the repertoire. You know, it reminds me a lot of Campbell. Campbell University has always kind of hung their hat on wanting to lead the nation and hit by pitches, and they do. And part of it is they crowd the plate, and then they don't move. So they leave it up to the umpire to make the hard decision, and that's a lot of what UCF did this weekend as well. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, they weren't doing anything illegal. As long as you're not getting hit by strikes, then it's all legal.
Yeah. I mean, if they're not sitting on the strike zone, they can get hit until they want to stop getting hit. Campbell, we didn't see him this year, obviously. I feel Campbell does crowd more than what we saw from UCF this weekend. But, yeah, they don't move. They don't move. If a pitch is coming their way, the only way they're moving is to make sure it hits the least painful part of their body. And they had to do that a lot this weekend.
All right, we'll go to our next, question. We have up. I know we had, I believe, one more. I'll put it up there. ECU Pirate Nation says, huge bomb by Zach. Thought we had a chance to catch it in the megaphones, but it kept going and going and going.
118 feet was the final distance on that one. That beats Francisco's on Saturday when at the top of the video board. So, I mean, it was obliterated by Agnos. That's two. He's had two this year, and they both have not been cheapies. Jack Sinclair made one mistake, frankly, in his outing, and that was leaving a fastball middle in to Agnos, and he did not miss it.
Good question. Bubba, you ready now for the AAC results, looking around the conference? So we can do that.
Yeah, we'll start off with next week's opponent, Wichita. They were on the road at Cincinnati, and they saw their struggles continue. Last weekend, they dropped all three down at Tulane, and this week they dropped three of four to the Bearcats, and so six out of seven they've lost. And then I think I was looking up the results between USF and Houston. I believe they split their four-game set.
Yeah, they had two doubleheaders back-to-back. And I know USF won the game – or the first game today, seven innings. I'm pretty sure Houston won the second game today. Yeah, Wichita has a couple of horses leading their rotation. But Cincinnati got to them this weekend. I mean, they ruled the second game of that doubleheader on Friday. And, you know, I walked out of that series with Cincinnati a few weeks ago. That's a veteran old lineup. We talked about the age for East Carolina. Well, Cincinnati's older, and it felt like they put it together this weekend offensively, and the Pirates see them again. So that will be something to keep an eye on moving forward in 3 weeks. The Pirates rematch with a very old and now wiser Bearcat team. It's going to be an important litmus test, I think, coming up against Wichita, a team that you can push them way out right now if you go in and you're able to take care of your business this weekend at X Stadium. Or Wichita's right back in the mix. Like, it's amazing how things can change over the span of 3 days in this league. As far as I know, right now, East Carolina is no longer sitting top of the league. So, yeah, Tulane swept their four-game set at Memphis. And so things can turn on a dime here. And there's every weekend there's an opportunity to get back in the discussion or someone out of the discussion. The Pirates do have that coming up on the table this weekend against Wichita.
Yeah, you talk about Tulane. They've won 10 straight now.
Yeah, they lost their first game in conference play because they didn't have their ace pitch. Braden Olthoff did not pitch their first game against Memphis, and since then they haven't lost. He sets up the rest of that pitching staff. And now, they have now the bats in the lineup. They're starting to cook a little bit more. Now they are atop the league. So in 2 weeks, they come here. And so that will be, you know, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the Wichita series. And now, 2 weeks later, we're talking about that Tulane series and how pivotal that could be. You have that one at home. But you got to take care of things this weekend first.
No doubt about it. It's going to be a great series, Wichita State. We'll take what we have in front of us. Trent, before we leave, I know Trent, appreciate everything you've done. Alexander's doing very well. My son went to a camp at Next Level probably a month or so ago, and he's been just on a tear right now. So thank you. I think that having experience there with you guys really helped him preseason, and certainly I want to give you a shout out for that publicly, as I told you privately. Folks, go to nextleveltc.com, 252-756-NEXT. You guys are fantastic. I saw the post you had on Facebook. You guys, I guess you have about relationships. You guys have built a lot of relationships with guys. Before we let you go, I just want to talk about your facility and how people can find you guys, and especially with the off season, so to speak, is where you win games. You always hear about that and putting in the individual work.
Yeah, no, thanks. We're doing great. Yeah, we're starting to free up a lot with space. So people, that want to get in, please feel free to give us a call or just stop by. We're on Wimbledon Drive. And I'll give you a quick update. I heard from Brian Packard today, and he's going to start getting their assignments. So Brian actually is, just to give everybody a quick update on a couple of Pirates, Brian said he's going to be in High A, which is going to be in West Michigan. So he'll be starting in High A. Brickhouse is going to be starting in High A, which I believe is Hillside, Oregon. Corey, does that sound right?
But
he's going High. And then Jake Washer told me that he thinks he's going to be in Myrtle Beach. That'll be kind of cool to be that close by with the Cubs organization. So I have not heard from Evan yet, Balaba, or somebody else. But those guys just in the last 48 hours, I guess, got their assignment. So that's kind of cool. So they're all taking that next step, and high A is where it starts to get real. So
where the rubber beats the road, right?
That's a big. That's where the pitching gets. It's a lot more challenging than low A and rookie ball. I just say that. So.
Hey, and Trent, Dave shared your post with the one you had on Facebook, and you know, in terms of being able to work with some of those guys, and you said at your core, you know, working with the younger athlete is more what you've been about, but how fun it was to work with, you know, Pack, Burley, and some of those guys. So if you would touch on that briefly.
Yeah, I just was making the point, you know, I got an opportunity to really build some relationships with those guys, which you don't always get because of the unusual length of the off season. And a lot of times with professional athletes, they may pop in for a month or two at a time, and they're really fun to work with, but it's different than having a kid, you know, let's say like Bryant that we've known since he was 11 years old and just getting to kind of go through the ups and downs. And that's really, you know, locally what we're about, whether it's the Little League Park, the middle school games, the high school games, we've got a, you know, a large number of kids that we get to see every single day. And you get to go through watching them go through puberty and then having girlfriends and then going to prom and all the while, you know, helping them get them better within their sports. But there's a personal side to it too. And I was just kind of making that point when I was kind of reflecting back and thinking about the off season that I had with some guys like Burley is a good example, who I didn't know real well personally. And we got, you know, I got to know him very intimately, because we were together every single day, you know, kind of working. And it was really funny because at the end he got to a point where he said, and he meant it the most complimentary way, but he said, I'm sick of working out with you. I'm sick of hitting my Coach Godwin. I'm just ready to go play baseball. And his point was just the offseason was so long. And, you know, he was ready to quit training and ready to go apply it and go play. And so I'm just happy for those guys that all of them. Alec, I don't know where he's starting yet. He hasn't told me. Maybe down there in the Gulf Coast League, or they may send him somewhere else. But he'll get his assignment the next day or two. But that really was the point, was just, you know, my passion and what we do day to day is work with, you know, athletes from 8 years old through 18 primarily. And it's fun. It's fun watching them grow.
And you bring up Burley in the Cardinals organization. So, I apologize, Kyle. But since he brought up Burley, you know, with him being in the Cardinals organization, you also have Holba and then and Cruz, et cetera.
Go, Corey.
I was just going to say, I mean, I had to spend, you know, I'm not training for baseball. That's never happening. But I had to spend time with Trent last summer at Elm Street during the Little League season when they were kind enough to invite to do some games, and Trent did some games with me, and seeing Trent around those kids and talking to the parents and getting to know those guys as well, and then hearing from, you know, former ECU players who are training with Trent this past offseason, current members of this team who had to use Next Level because of the COVID restrictions and trying to find some spaces to work out when the campus wasn't open. There's not a piece of baseball in this community that Trent is not tied to in some capacity. And baseball is such a great part of this area. And Trent's such a huge reason why, from little kid to now professional and everywhere in between. And I've been fortunate and lucky to kind of get to know Trent a little bit here over the last, you know, calendar year and see the impacts and what he's meant to some of these kids and now adults. And how they begin to try playing this professionally.
Jeez, guys, y'all making me blush. Thank you, Corey. Yeah, I do need to say, you know, it's a group effort though. Really, we have great instructors, great guys that are all in with these kids that, you know, that have been there a long, long time. You know, Coach Lance Martin and Coach Rodney Harris, particularly, who have been there for longer than Next Level's even existed. And you know, I think all of them, you know, the common thing we all share is they just enjoy working with kids and celebrating success with them, you know. And my wife is heavily involved. I mean, if she didn't do what she did on the front end, I wouldn't be allowed to go pop all over the ballparks and be at ballparks all the time and see these kids play. So it's fun. And we've got a lot of folks. It would take too long to mention all of them, but our staff and everybody that's there enjoys what they do. It's fun. And we're in an area where we're really blessed that, you know, you can be as good as you want to be. Whatever talent God's blessed you with, you've got every resource you need. It's not just us. It's, you know, whether it's junior college ball or East Carolina or the high schools here or the little leagues in this area, everybody's good. And the softball leagues, and we'll be hosting the World Series. So there's so many resources there for people. And we're glad to get to play our part in that.
No doubt about it. Thank you again for being the sponsor of Extra Innings. No doubt about it, too. That means a lot. So Appreciate you gentlemen coming on. And we before we go, we've got the graphic here. I know Bubba has for the Wichita State Series. Obviously, it'll be on ESPN Plus game one, to be determined for games two, three, and four. And obviously, you can listen to our good buddy on the Learfield IMG College broadcast on 94.3 The Game and the TuneIn Radio app. And that's, of course, our good friend Corey Glore will be out there in X Stadium in Wichita, Kansas. So Wichita State's going to be a great one. Look forward to you guys. Thank you guys so much for that. The time has gone by very fast, but talking baseball, we appreciate both of you. Trent Britt, owner of Next Level, and of course, Corey Glore, the play-by-play voice of the ECU Pirates. It's going to be the baseball team. It's going to be fantastic, guys. I'm looking forward to the next few weeks. It's going to be critical for this season.
It'll be fun. It's right in. 4 weeks left to go before the conference tournament. This will be exciting.
Giddy up. It's going to be fun.
No doubt.
Gas Trent, on the right, I believe is the term.
No doubt. Thanks, guys, very much. Thank you, Kyle. Thanks, Bubba. You've been watching and listening to Extra Innings right here, brought to you by Next Level Training Center and our good friend Trent Britt. Thank you guys very much. We'll see you next time right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
Thanks.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!